Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 5th, 2026. We'll start today's reading on the front page with the 2026 Macon County Fair. Fair Royals crowned. Aurora Coburn is crowned the 2026 Miss Macon County Fair by the 2025 Junior Miss Kennedy Warnsley, 2025 Miss Alyssa Wicks, and 2025 Little Miss Kingsley Joyner at the Macon County Fair in Decatur on Wednesday, June 3rd. And there are three people, the older queen, the middle queen, and the youngest queen from 2025 crowning the new 2026 Macon County Fair Queen. And then there are three pictures, Bonnie Steinberg, Quinn Waghoff, and Aurora Coburn, just their headshots. So we'll see what it's about. First night of festivities capped with fireworks and comfort food. The Macon County Fair ended the first night of festivities with a bang. Fireworks closed out Wednesday's activities above the Macon County Fairgrounds shortly after the 2026 Fair Royalty were crowned. Aurora Coburn, 19, of Decatur, and her picture is up here, claimed the title of Miss Macon County Fair. 5-year-old Little Miss Bonnie Steinberg of Clinton and 12-year-old Junior Miss Quinn Waghoff of Blue Mound round out the royal court. That's why the three pictures are there. "I cannot wait for the year to come," Coburn said shortly after she received a crown. The trio said they plan to take advantage of what the fair has to offer, including the rides, carnival food, and the grandstand concert featuring country artist Baker Blankenship. "I'm also looking forward to the rodeo and the demo derby," Coburn said. Last year's queen, Alyssa Wicks, was on the stage throughout the evening, wrapping up her official duties by helping with this year's contestants. "I think I've had a good year," she said, before relinquishing her title. Wicks competed in the Miss Illinois County Fair pageant in January, placing in the top 16. "But I really like going to all the events," she said about the volunteer work required of the queens. Brooke DeHorty, pageant director, was just as nervous before the pageant. "I always get nervous for them," she said, "but I just sit back and watch and see all the stuff that they've learned come out." Another queen, as well as a king, also were crowned. Linda Harper and Blake Allison received their own crowns and sashes after their names were announced as Macon County Fair Queen and King. The contest was new to this year's fair. Three men and two women sought the titles, with the winners being crowned based on how much money they raised for the fair. King contestants included Allison, Billy Rybak, and Zach Stroud. Queen candidates were Harper and Danielle Smith. "The job of them is very simple," said Evan Hall, Macon County Fair Board president. "You get to go out and fundraise however you can. We don't care. It helps us cover the fair." The candidates collected a total of $2,700. As the Mount Zion Chamber of Commerce executive director, Harper reached out to others through social media. "We're just helping the fair is how I look at it," she said, "and I love the fair." With his crown nearby, Allison was ready to hit the festival's highlights. "I'll go get a corn dog or something," the broker for Gallagher Insurance said. A few new carnival foods have been added to the festival as well. Grant Riles, owner of L&M Mac Co. Food Trucks, brought the macaroni and cheese truck to the Macon County Fair. "The trailer's brand new," he said. "It's the first time it's been out." The company has visited the Macon County Fair in the past and has three food trucks serving various dishes this year. In the past, the company has tried out new menu items such as pickle pizza. Riles said they listened to their customers. "We finally decided to bring the people what they wanted, he said about this year's mac and cheese dishes. Along with the cheesy dish, the comfort food can come with various toppings or served in a waffle cone. It's something different, Riles said. And the photos here on page A4 show Tegan King, age 7, and Trey King, age 8, racing down the big slide at the Macon County Fair Carnival in Decatur on Wednesday, June 3rd. And they're on those little cloths that you sit under to make it slicker, and their mouths are wide open, and I imagine they're emitting a scream. And then another photo here shows Leah Burns and her daughter Vera, 4, watch the fireworks, recognizing the 250th anniversary of American independence at the Macon County Fair in Decatur on Wednesday, June 3rd. And we see the backs of people looking up at a huge firework in the sky. And the little girl that Vera, age 4, Leah Burns' daughter, Leah Burns is holding her daughter, and the daughter has her hands over her ears to protect from the loud noise. And here's what is going on today at the fair. Here's what's happening on Friday, June 5th at the Macon County Fair. It's Teacher Education Appreciation Day, free admission with identification. The gates open from 3 to 10 p.m., the carnivals from 5 to 10 p.m. Rodeo by TNA Bucking Bulls is at 7 p.m. in the grandstand. Cost is $15, $6 for ages 5 to 11. Mutton busting for kids ages 8 and under at 5:30 p.m. Country line dancing from 8 to 10:30 p.m. In the Dunn Company Community Building. Also on the front page, Macon County, pause on data centers, Wade. Developers look to build one outside of Taylorville. The Macon County Zoning Board has voted to recommend that Macon County Board enact a one-year moratorium on data centers. No applications or proposals have been submitted, said Andy Kite, legal counsel for the county, but the Zoning Board wanted to get ahead of any such action to give the county time to either draft an ordinance specifically for data centers or to amend other ordinances already in place to create guidelines and regulations should a proposal come along. A public hearing on the issue is held Wednesday morning. The issue is expected to be considered during the next county board meeting, scheduled for 6 p.m. Thursday, June 11th, in the boardroom on the fifth floor of Macon County Office Building. David Horn, a member of the City Council, who's also running for mayor, said during the hearing that his first political position was on the Planning Commission and that it drafted guidelines for wind energy installations long before they were proposed. He said such a move by the Zoning Board and the County Board, if it accepts the recommendation and acts upon it, was wise. It's such a complicated issue, said Stephanie Brown, who also spoke during the public comment portion of the meeting. Once it's here, it's too late. We should study it. We should establish regulations in advance. The Macon County Board has jurisdiction over zoning only in the unincorporated areas of the county, K-E-Y-T. Anything inside the city limits of Decatur is up to the City Council, but because data centers are typically so large that one would require extensive acreage to build, those areas outside the city limits of Decatur and other county communities are the most likely locations. Several people wanted to discuss the pros and cons of data centers in general, and Kite said that it was a discussion that should be saved for when and if the county board chooses to draft such guidelines. The only consideration for this meeting was whether to recommend the moratorium. The Logan County Board voted last month to impose a 12-month moratorium on data center applications, including a 500-megawatt proposal near Latham that had been the source of public outcry over the last several months. Illinois lawmakers were unable to approve the Power Act, a multifaceted data center regulation bill, during the recently concluded legislative session. The Power Act requires data center companies to pay for their own energy generation and for the energy to come from renewable sources such as solar, wind, and battery storage. The bill would also require data center projects to track and report how much water they use and to submit water management plans to the Illinois Water Survey, a nonprofit, non-government research group connected to the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Another provision would require more transparency about data center development and for data center developers to sign community benefits agreements in the places they're constructed. Christian County Data Center Project. Data centers were also the topic at an event held Thursday in the University of Illinois Extension in Taylorville. Representatives from Eagle Rock Partners, its developer, and Thomas and Hutton Engineering were available to answer questions from the residents about a proposed data center in that community. At this point, it's very early in the process, said Eagle Rock's Terry Reniker. The three sessions on Tuesday were to answer questions, address concerns, and find out if the community even wants such a center. We're here to be transparent and invite the community to take a look and see what we're talking about and doing. He said, the proposed center is 3.6 miles southwest of Taylorville, near Clarksdale, an unincorporated area. Reniker said it would include 10 buildings, each about 200,000 square feet. Over time, it would generate $85 million a year in taxes, of which about half would go to schools. About 500 permanent jobs would be created, with about around 1,000 construction jobs while it's being built. One regularly voiced concern, he said, is that such a center would use a lot of water, but that isn't the case. The water is recirculated, not wasted. The company already has met with Ameren and the rural cooperative and have committed to paying for any upgrades that would be necessary to supply the center with power. Another concern is noise, and he said he had measured the ambient sound at the property line earlier that day and is confident that they would not exceed that or disturb the surrounding area. Data centers power AI such as ChatGPT and Google, he said, and this one would serve as a training center for those programs, allowing them to collect information to power their processes. When you ask a question of AI, it depends on information in its memory to formulate an answer, with a trillion variables in its database to draw on. Christian County farmers Joshua Sullivan and Trent Norris attended to find out what effect such a center might have on their operations. We've just come to this meeting for information, to ask some questions that landowners in this area are going to ask, like what's going to happen to our water, our land, the noise, Sullivan said. He had expected a presentation from the company, he said, with a Q&A to follow, rather than the informal gathering where people could just walk up to company representatives and quiz them. That's what Norris expected, too, and like Sullivan, was a little disappointed. We're trying to educate the public, said Matthew Hart, executive director of Christian County Economic Development Corporation, which hosted the event. We have a developer who wants to come here, and they say they can bring over 500 permanent jobs and 1,000 construction jobs. So that's a big new thing and something a lot of people don't know about and what a data center is. So we wanted to give them the opportunity to come to hear from the developer what they want to do and what this is going to look like. And this is just the first step in many weeks and months of letting people know about an employer that wants to come to Christian County. And the photo here on page A4 shows a meeting Tuesday at the University of Illinois Extension in Taylorville on Drew people, carry, it's a funny sentence, on Taylorville, on Drew people curious about the proposed data center near Clarksdale. And there's a large room full of people. There's tables, there's people behind tables that probably are answering questions, and people with their backs to us in front of tables asking questions, and many people are chatting throughout the room in different groups. In state news, youth social media safeguards bill passes. Springfield lawmakers on the final day of the General Assembly passed a bill to regulate how minors interact with social media and other online platforms to make them less addictive. The goal of House Bill 5511, the Children's Online Social Media Safety Act, is to prevent children under the age of 18 from being exposed to harmful content and addictive features by requiring social media companies to confirm a user's age through the device's operating system. The bill doesn't prevent children from downloading or using social media apps. During device setup, parents would set up the child's age, which would adjust certain design features in apps, such as algorithmic feeds, the visibility of the child's profile, and what media can be shown to them. The bill passed the Senate unanimously on Monday with a vote of 57-0. It passed the House a second time on Monday with a 113-0 vote. Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed the bill during his February budget address, and he celebrated its passage on Monday and said that he would sign it. I'm proud of the Illinois General Assembly passed the Children's Online Social Media Safety Act, marking an important milestone in our efforts to improve kids' safety and privacy online, mitigate the harmful effects of social media on mental and physical health, and prevent financial scamming, Pritzker said in a statement. Efforts to pass some kind of measure in Illinois have been ongoing for a few years. This legislation is about recognizing a simple reality. Children are not miniature adults, Senator Willie Preston, Democrat of Chicago, the bill sponsor, said at a Saturday committee meeting. These platforms invest billions of dollars into capturing attention, maximizing engagement, keeping users online for as long as possible. When that system is directed at developing minds, the consequences will be and have proven to be devastating and sadly irreversible. The bill previously passed the House in April with a bipartisan vote of 82-27. The Senate version mainly increased privacy protections for minors and altered definitions to target the most harmful platforms. While this legislation is not perfect, lawmakers cannot continue waiting for the perfect solution while technology continues to evolve around us, Senator Sue Rezin, Republican of Morris, said in an emailed statement. She helped work on some of the bill's language and has advocated for youth social media protections for years. What's in the bill? The bill prohibits social media companies from using a minor's viewing history or data stored on their device to determine what shows up in their feeds. Instead, feeds for minors will only be allowed to show information the user requested or searched for, or was posted by a creator the user follows. Youths will also be able to see media that is a direct private message to them. Under the bill, platforms would be required to establish some default privacy settings for minors, shield a minor's precise location, and limit digital currency transactions. Social sites and apps would also be prohibited from sending notifications between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. The Illinois Attorney General's Office would enforce the law, which takes effect in 2028, if signed. Violators would be liable for fines up to $2,500 for each child for unintentional violations and up to $7,500 per child for intentional violations. Lobbyists for tech companies raised concerns that the bill may violate the First Amendment and warned that it will likely face lawsuits. But the governor's office said in a Saturday committee that the bill's language is modeled after legislation in other states that have survived court challenges. Representative Jennifer Gong Gershowitz, the House sponsor, said that she doubted social media companies would ever be completely on board. I'm not sure we're ever going to get complete neutrality from social media companies that are going to be asked to comply with this act in order to keep our kids safe from addictive algorithms that are frankly designed to keep them glued to their devices, she said on the House floor. But this is an incredibly important measure to address the most dangerous features of these devices, which is that they're designed to be addictive to children. Nationwide effort. As of April, at least 19 states have laws regulating social media for children on the books, though many have been blocked or tied up in court because tech companies claim they violate the First Amendment and privacy rights. In March, a New Mexico jury determined that Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, had knowledge the platform harmed children's mental health and concealed information about child sexual exploitation on its platforms. The company was fined $375 million for violating New Mexico's youth social media law. And there's a photo of Representative Jennifer Gong Gershowitz speaking on the House floor on May 21st, 2026. And she's sitting there in front of a microphone in the House. In local news, gunman gets 20-year term. Shootout results in conviction for felon who fired at concealed carry permit holder. Aggressive gunman Telly C. Young, who got the worst of it in an exchange of fire with a concealed carry permit holder, has been sent to prison for 20 years. The 49-year-old defendant had been shot in the chest and right bicep in the early hours of September 2nd when he burst into a storage building in the 200 block of West Packard Street, according to police reports. A 67-year-old man with the concealed carry license owns the building and was busy performing repairs on a lawnmower when suddenly confronted by Young. It was not clear from a sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department whether Young knew the victim, but he is quoted as telling him, "I own this building. Where is my sister?" And then he began shooting. The victim said Telly fired approximately 3 to 4 shots in his direction, said Officer Curtis Kirk, who signed the affidavit. The victim said he then drew his own firearm and fired back at Telly approximately 3 to 4 times, striking Telly. The victim ordered the wounded assailant to drop his weapon and then held him at gunpoint while he called 911. He had surrendered his own semi-automatic pistol when officers arrived and carefully walked them through the incident as it had unfolded. He faced no charges. Young defended himself in court, and a series of legal rulings whittled down the charges against him until he was tried on a single count of unlawful possession of a weapon by a repeat felony offender. A Macon County Circuit Court jury had convicted him March 10th after a 2-day trial. He was sentenced May 26 by Judge Lindsay Shelton, who ordered his incarceration to be served at 85%. A check of Young's criminal history shows the 20-year sentence is the longest and the latest in a series of prison terms handed down to him. Defending himself in 2004, he'd been convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm and was sentenced to 8 years. He was accused of shooting a Decatur man in the leg, but jurors had acquitted him the charge of committing aggravated battery with a firearm. Another jury, a few months later in 2004, had convicted him of another felon in possession of a weapon charge, and he was sentenced to 6 years. That sentence, however, was ordered to run concurrently with the 8-year prison term. And then in 2017, after defending himself again, Young was sentenced to 10 years after being convicted of being an armed habitual criminal following a bench trial. He had been paroled on that offense in February 2025. Balloons bow out of Route 66. This is from Lincoln. In response to rising costs and a lack of financial backing, the Balloons Over Route 66 Committee had announced that the hot air balloon portion of the event will not take place this year. The committee announced on social media Tuesday evening that it had made the incredibly difficult decision to discontinue the hot air balloons. The two-day event, scheduled for August 28 and 29 this year, will still feature live music, barbecue competitions, an art fair, races, and an array of family-friendly activities, the committee said. Following the announcement, Lincoln Mayor Tracy Welch shed some light in a Facebook post on the situation behind the scenes. Following the announcement, the festival began in 1988 and quickly became a tremendous success, drawing visitors from near and far, she wrote. Unfortunately, the event came to an end in 2017 when the Chamber of Commerce closed its doors due to financial difficulties. In 2019, former mayor and hot air balloon pilot Seth Goodman revived the festival, Welsh wrote, taking on much of the financial burden personally, contributing well over $100,000 to keep the balloon portion of the event going over the past several years. The typical cost for a balloon event that size is around $30,000. Those expenses include pilot lodging, propane for every balloon throughout the weekend, meals for pilots and crews, welcome packages, and what is commonly referred to as show-up money, Welch wrote. This is in addition to the repair and upkeep costs of the balloons as well, he said. Possibly the great concern, Welch said, involves liability. Yes, every pilot carries insurance on their balloon. However, event organizers ultimately bear responsibility for spectator safety, accidents and injuries, traffic and parking issues, weather-related incidents, property damage, and countless other potential risks. Seth has personally assumed much of that responsibility since 2019, Welch wrote. I know he loves Lincoln and cares deeply about this community, but nobody can blame him for not wanting to risk everything he has worked for his entire life to simply provide entertainment for others, he added. I certainly don't. This is just a little tidbit. Stephen Colbert ice cream flavor to stay on shelves. Stephen Colbert's late night reign may have come to an end with an expiration date, but a Ben & Jerry's pint created in his image will live on forever. Those worried that the Burlington, Vermont-based ice cream company would retire AmeriCorn Dream following the cancellation can breathe a sigh of relief. Stephen's AmeriCorn Dream flavor, a perennial fan favorite in Ben & Jerry's top 10 flavors, isn't going anywhere. We like to say the AmeriCorn Dream continues, Ben & Jerry's said in a statement. While there are no plans to pull AmeriCorn Dream off shelves, Ben & Jerry's is upping the packaging to reflect Colbert's exit. Instead of wearing a suit and tie in the image, Colbert dons more casual attire in the new photo. In addition to updating the photo, the backdrop as well, as reference to the Late Show host, were removed from the new pint. Thanks for all the sweet memories at Colbert Late Show. We'll think of you every time we follow a caramel swirl toward a chocolate-covered waffle cone piece, Ben & Jerry said in a May 20th social media tribute. From the American flag pint we unveiled back in 2007 to today's brand new look, we're proud to have partnered with Stephen for 19 years and counting. Here's to 19 more as a top 10 flavor. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 5th, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.